Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the National Podcast from the volunteers at Cune Review Recording Service, normally in our studios in the Bishop Riggs Media Centre in Crow Hill Road. But due to the lockdown, we are recording in our homes across West Central Scotland. Please bear with us as we try to improve the quality of the recording, as we are recording in our homes. So now, here's the National for the week ending the 7th of April 2020.
This is the National on Thursday, the 2nd of April 2020. Former Labour peer and STV politics editor James Gordon dies. By Angus Cochrane. Former broadcaster and Labour peer Lord Gordon of Strathblane has died at the age of 83. James Jimmy Gordon passed away on Tuesday, leaving behind his wife Anne, three children and four grandchildren. The Maryhill man studied at the University of Glasgow before going into a broadcasting career that led him to becoming political editor at STV, before helping to establish Radio Clyde as its managing director. He was also a former member of the Scottish Development Agency and chairman of Visit Scotland. A statement from his family paid tribute to a much-loved brother and uncle who took great pleasure in spending time with his extended family. It said, "Family was very important to Jimmy. Of all the roles he had in his life, the one that brought him most pleasure was being papa to his four grandchildren, with whom he was frankly besotted." All messages received over the last day have focused on three things: his generosity, his kindness, and his enthusiasm for life. He was a kind and supportive father. Family came first, and although he never preached to us, he always had a profound wisdom to share if you ask for it. He never judged unfairly and was patient and tolerant of all kinds of foolishness. He had a great sense of humour and enjoyed food, wine and good company. Nothing made him happier than his grandchildren. He will be missed so much by us all. The House of Lords Communications and Digital Committee, which Lord Gordon was part of, posted a tribute on Twitter. It said, "Jimmy had been a committed member of the committee since 2017, as well as from 2009 to 2013. We will miss him dearly and send our condolences to his family." Radio Clyde said it was very sad to report the death of our founder. Comedian and radio host Andy Cameron, who worked at Clyde for a number of years, said, "Another good guy gone. Jimmy Gordon, Lord Gordon of Strathblane, has passed on. What an absolute gentleman. R.I.P. Jimmy." And that article was by Angus Cochrane. This is the National on Thursday, the 2nd of April 2020. "This is how coronavirus could shape the global warming fight." By Emma O'Toole. Twitter, EmerMotoole. A delay to UN climate talks due to take place in Glasgow in November already looked inevitable before the official announcement on Wednesday night. But the postponement due to the coronavirus pandemic leaves questions over action by countries that need to urgently increase ambition to cut greenhouse gases to avoid the worst impacts of global warming. The UN and UK announced the COP26 climate summit, the most important since the Paris Agreement was secured in 2015, would be delayed to 2021, as nations grapple with COVID-19 infection, lockdowns and economic fallout. Experts and campaigners have warned the pandemic has not paused the climate crisis and are urging governments to use economic stimulus packages they will draw up in response to COVID-19 to rebuild sustainably. Former UN climate chief Cristiana Figueres said, "If governments put health, nature regeneration and climate action at the core of every decision they make in recovering from this pandemic, we can emerge as a stronger and more resilient society and ensure the COP26 puts us on track to a safer climate future." The short-term impact of measures to tackle the pandemic has seen falls in air pollution, emissions and energy demand as airlines ground their fleets, people stay home and industry is closed down. But any pollution winds from countries grinding to a halt could be quickly undone as they gear up again, especially if governments and industries use the crisis to undo existing regulations such as vehicle emissions standards. Professor Chris Hilson, director of the Reading Centre for Climate and Justice at the University of Reading, said, "What government should be doing instead is to make state support for businesses conditional on them committing to meet climate targets. They also need to use weakened oil prices to remove fossil fuel subsidies." The delay to the talks gives countries currently focused on the immediate health crisis more time to submit updated plans for more ambitious emissions cuts, as they are expected to under the Paris deal. The diplomatic timetable was already tight for the UK to show leadership by setting out its policies to meet its target to cut emissions to net zero by 2050 and get key countries to update their own plans. With the pandemic, that timetable became impossible, and the groundwork, including preparatory meetings for a successful summit, would not have been laid. Professor Mark Maslin, Professor of Climatology at University College London, said the delay was a blessing in disguise, as the government was nowhere near ready to lead such important international negotiations. "Now we have time to prepare properly and learn lessons from the unprecedented global response to COVID-19 to how best to deal with climate change. The COVID-19 response showed the critical central role of governments, rather than markets, in looking after the health and safety of society and should be used to tackle climate change," he said. The European Union said it is on track to set out plans to cut emissions by 50-55% by 2030 in September, one of the key milestones in the COP26 build-up, which could give other countries more time to respond. It may also be an advantage that the Glasgow talks have shifted away from the immediate aftermath of the US presidential election, due to take place days before the meeting. By 2021, the dust would have settled on any re-election win for Donald Trump, who has pulled the US out of the Paris Agreement, or a Democratic president could be determined to take climate action in the Oval Office. The UK also has presidency of the G7 group of major economies in 2021, giving the opportunity for a joined-up approach that links the climate fight with economic resilience. Lord Stern, advisor to the UK COP26 presidency and chairman of the Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change and the Environment at LSE, said, "There is an opportunity in the recovery from the COVID-19 crisis to create a new approach to growth that is sustainable, inclusive, and resilient. Now is the time to forge a new internationalism and move from this crisis to a much more sustainable and resilient economy in closer harmony with the natural world." The Prime Minister's spokesman said the conference, though delayed, remains a hugely important event, and it will still be held in Glasgow, with the government working hard to ensure it is a success. And that article was by Emma O'Toole.
The National, Friday the 3rd of April 2020. Bigger appeals SRU's null and void verdict, by David Barnes. Bigger Rugby Club has lodged an appeal against the Scottish Rugby Union's decision to declare the domestic men's season null and void as a solution to the shutdown in rugby caused by the coronavirus pandemic. The Hartree Mill side were 19 points clear at the top of National League One, the second tier of the club game in Scotland, when rugby was put on cold ice just over 2 weeks ago, with second in the table Heriot's Blues only having 3 games left, meaning they could have picked up a maximum of 15 points if the season had been played to its natural conclusion. The league trophy had already been awarded to Bigger, and their sights had turned towards preparing for a return to the Premiership for the first time since 2006. However, that all came crashing down round their ankles on Tuesday afternoon when the SRU announced that the fairest solution to the impasse caused by the lockdown would be to mothball the league season altogether, with every side involved starting the 2020-2021 campaign in the same position as they had started 2019-2020. Bigger are the only team in the Premiership, / National Leagues, to have been denied guaranteed promotion, while East League 3 side Dalkeith are in the same boat. Club president Johnny Bogle had initially indicated that Bigger were unlikely to challenge the decision, but having subsequently gauged the mood of the wider membership, it was decided that an appeal should be submitted to the SRU, and that was lodged late on Wednesday night. "There was quite strong feeling throughout the club that we had to at least appeal," explained Bogle. "It's a very difficult situation, but our feeling is that having an 11-team premiership next season would be workable and the fairest solution." Bogle pointed out that news yesterday morning that Newcastle Falcons, the runaway leaders in the second-tier English Championship, will be promoted back into the premiership next season, despite the fact they could still theoretically be caught by Ealing Trailfinders, had reinforced the club's sense of grievance. However, in this instance, Saracens were already condemned to relegation out of the Premiership as punishment for salary cap breaches, so there was a space needing to be filled. That's not the case in the Scottish Premiership, with bottom-of-the-table Edinburgh Accies still having a fighting chance of avoiding the drop when play was halted. Among the objections voiced by club members is their belief that the questionnaire sent out to all clubs in Scotland, which had five possible solutions to the problem, was not presented as a voting card, rather a tool to help gauge opinion. And as such, many clubs responded on the basis of what suits them best, rather than what is the fairest outcome overall. The five solutions considered were to promote and relegate based on the league tables as at the time of the suspension, to take an average of points over the season and promote and relegate based on this outcome, to count earlier fixtures as double headers and promote and relegate based on this outcome, where neither home or away fixtures have been played, award 2 points to each team, to award 2 points to each team for all outstanding fixtures, or to declare the season null and void with no promotion and relegation. "We believe we are a Premiership club, especially with the new Super Six structure, and we felt we'd timed our run perfectly," reflected Bogle. "Our academy is now beginning to really pay dividends, with 90% of our squad having come through our own system, and we've had a few older heads like Craig Borthwick come in to provide experience. So we felt we were ready to make the step up, and I think our results have proved that." By David Barnes. The National, 3rd of April 2020. Burnley and Ireland duo Robbie Brady and Jeff Hendrick linked with Celtic. By Aidan Smith. Ireland duo Robbie Brady and Jeff Hendrick are reportedly being targeted by Celtic boss Neil Lennon. The pair, who are currently playing their football at Burnley in the Premier League, are out of contract at the end of the season and are yet to agree a new deal. This would mean they could leave the club on a free at the end of the season. Reports from Team Talk say wideman Brady is being eyed as a replacement for out-of-contract Johnny Hayes, but English giants Newcastle are also reportedly keeping tabs on the player. Burnley have opened talks with central midfielder Hendrick over a new deal, but with other clubs swooping, the 28-year-old might make the decision to exit the Clarets. He's played over 100 games under Sean Dyche after switching from Derby in 2016. Newcastle might have the upper hand in trying to sign the duo, with Magpies boss Steve Bruce having signed Brady for Hull City from Manchester United. Their relationship could play a key role in a deal being penned. We also told this week how Celtic striker Odson Edouard was being targeted by Newcastle for a transfer fee of £30 million. The French under-21 international has also been linked with Arsenal, but it remains to be seen whether the Hoops can tie him down on a new bumper deal. Rangers ace Alfredo Morelos has also been linked with the Toon, as the St James's Park side look to strengthen their attacking options ahead of the return of the football season. By Aidan Smith. From The National, 3rd of April 2020. "Celtic should be crowned champions because Rangers can't catch them," says Mikel Lustig. By Aidan Smith. Mikel Lustig has called for Celtic to be declared champions, insisting there's no way the Hoops can be caught at the top of the league. Neil Lennon's side are currently 13 points clear at the peak of the Scottish Premiership, but with football in lockdown, it remains to be seen whether the season will be fully played out. Some have called for the campaign to be declared null and void, while others insist the season should end, with current standings counting as final. And Lustig believes the SFA and SPFL should hand Selts the title now. Speaking to the Daily Record, he said, "It's not any surprise that I think Celtic deserve to win the league and be named champions. I know Celtic would prefer to play the rest of the games and to win the trophy after that, but that doesn't look like it's going to be possible. As things stand, Celtic, 13 points clear, and they deserve to win the league. There are going to be other teams who want the season to be null and void, but Celtic are well ahead and deserve to win. Hopefully, that will be the final decision, and Celtic will be named as Scottish champions again. There's no way, even if the season resumed, that Celtic would be caught over the remaining games." In Belgium, the country's football association opted to end the season early, with Club Brugge being crowned champions. They had a 15-point lead over second-place Gent. And Lustig, who now plays for Gent, admits this was a sensible decision to make. He added, "It's good in Belgium. We have a bit of closure. Everybody wanted it to be fair for everyone else. But at the moment, if they declare Celtic champions, then the other side of Glasgow are going to say they didn't deserve it, and vice versa. It's going to be strange for everyone, but unless they somehow find a way to play the games and finish the season, but if they can't, then Celtic have to be named as champions. It would be different if they were only a couple of points in front of the team in second place, but we're talking 13 points. Club Brugge have been named champions. For us, we were second, 15 points behind Club Brugge. My feeling is that that's the fair thing to do. I can't see us playing football again over the upcoming months." By Aidan Smith. From The National, Friday 3rd of April 2020. Peterhead players and staff willing to work for free. By Ian Collin. Simon Ferry has revealed some of Peterhead's players and management staff were willing to work for nothing in a bid to help the club survive the coronavirus pandemic. Manager Jim McInally, assistant Davy Nicholls, skipper Scott Brown and player coach Ferry held talks with chairman Roger Morrison when it became clear action was needed in the face of the SPFL shutdown. Ferry has praised Morrison's handling of the discussions and his efforts to bring in the fresh investment that has allowed the salary reductions to be kept to minimum pending government bailout money. Ferry said, "The chairman was open and honest, and you do not always get that from people at the top of clubs. He told us what money the club has, what money was no longer coming in, and what money was due to go out. We went into the discussions knowing that Peterhead would be in difficult times if wages continued to be paid with no income coming in. Members of the management team and some of the players were willing to give up all or some of their wages to protect those who were getting to be stretched the furthest. The chairman wanted to give everyone the majority of what they're due, but he did not know if that was possible. To be fair to him, he has gone out and made that happen. He has brought in fresh investment at a difficult time for everyone, and he deserves credit for that." Ferry added to the club website, "What he has done will keep everyone ticking over until help from the government hopefully kicks in." By Ian Collin. The National, 3rd of April 2020. UEFA issue Champions League and Europa League warning. By James Kearney. Any league that concludes early could end up forfeiting their places in European competitions, UEFA have warned. In a letter addressed to its member nations, the governing body outlined their hope that the remainder of the 2019-2020 season will be played out in July and August. But any division that does not fulfil the remaining fixtures could be excluded from the Champions League and the Europa League next season. The letter, signed by the European Club Association and European Leagues, reads, "Since participation in UEFA club competitions is determined by the sporting results achieved at the end of a full domestic competition, a premature termination would cast doubts about the fulfilment of such condition. We are confident that football can restart in the months to come, with conditions that will be dictated by public authorities. Their work is now focusing on scenarios encompassing the months of July and August, including the possibility that the UEFA competitions restart after the completion of domestic leagues. A joint management of calendars is strictly required, as the conclusion of the current season must be coordinated with the start of the new one, which may be partly impacted because of the overstretch. Closely following the development of the current situation, the calendar working group will indicate as soon as possible, and ideally by mid-May, which of the plans can be enacted for the completion of the season without leaving anyone behind. Belgium's Juleper League became the first top-flight European division to conclude their season on Thursday, when Club Bruges were named as champions. They enjoyed a 15-point gap over second-place Ghent, with one game to go before the league split into the championship playoff section, where there would have been an additional 10 games. However, the lead that Bruges enjoyed over their rivals would have been reduced for the second stage of the season. Points accrued during the regular season are halved when the championship playoff phase begins. By James Kearney. The National, 7th of April 2020. Rangers director Alistair Johnson questions if Celtic will be awarded 8.5 in a row if SPFL call title early. By Aidan Smith. Rangers director Alistair Johnson has questioned whether Celtic would be awarded, quote, 8.5 in a row, end quote, if the SPFL decide to call the title early. Johnson insists if the Hoops were crowned champions now, then there would be forever an asterisk beside the 2019-2020 league campaign. Neil Lennon's side are currently 13 points clear at the top of the Scottish Premiership, with Rangers in second place, and it remains to be seen how the campaign will be played out. Some have called for the league to be declared null and void, while others believe the campaign should be ended, with current standings counting as final. Johnson, 71, however, believes all games should be played out if entirely possible. Speaking to The Times, he said, "I don't want to be frivolous about it, but a lot of Rangers fans have reached out to me and basically said, 'Mr. Johnson, if Celtic is designated as the winners of the league, does it mean they've won 8.5 in a row? That's not something you want, that asterisk. So, ideally, I can't imagine that anybody really wants to have their efforts undermined or compromised or not appreciated. The ideal would be to get the full season done, but there's also the reality of the financial situation. Can you actually afford to run by June? You've got a lot of players that are out of contract at the end of that month. What's going to happen? The financial circumstances of football clubs right now is also significant. Ideally, from the club's standpoint and for the integrity of the game, we would like every effort to be made to finish the season. That's going to be challenging. There's still April, May, June and potentially July before things get going again. But we've got to be realistic. We've got to work with reality and not aspiration. No question about that." A joint SPFL and SFA panel are expected to make an announcement on the future of the 2019-2020 campaign later this week. By Aidan Smith. The National, Tuesday, the 7th of April 2020. Rangers boss Steven Gerrard on his pride after Ibrox players and coaches defer wages. By Gavin McCafferty. Rangers manager Steven Gerrard has spoken of his pride after a unanimous decision among his coaches and players to defer wages in order to protect non-football staff's income. Rangers earlier revealed the first team squad had volunteered to temporarily forgo a portion of their wages for 3 months. The Ibrox club will also make use of the government's job retention scheme to ensure other employees receive their full wages. The players and coaching staff are reported to be taking only half of their salaries for 3 months, but will be reimbursed once football resumes following the suspension amid the coronavirus pandemic. Gerrard told his club's Twitter account, "The players and the directors and staff have shown good leadership and responsibility to defer the wages. I think it was a no-brainer and the right thing to do. It's important that you show respect to all the people at the club, whatever your role is, and I think we've shown real good togetherness by doing this. I'm very proud of the efforts and the support of everyone at the club. It was unanimous that everyone wanted to do this. It's important during these hard times that no one suffers from financial hardship. It does make me really proud as a manager that everyone was really keen to make sure that everyone else was looked after. A club statement read, Rangers can confirm that first team players, manager, coaches and executive directors have volunteered to take a salary deferral for the next 3 months. Senior players and staff were keen to ensure that no Rangers employee suffered financial hardship during this crisis. All parties volunteered and wholeheartedly agreed to defer wages to ensure that fellow colleagues could continue to be paid their salaries in full. We are proud of the leadership and responsibility taken by senior members of staff and acknowledge the positive impact that this will have on everyone at Rangers. We are resolved that the integrity of the club is maintained as we continue our focus on ensuring the financial stability of the business. Due to the extraordinary challenges from the ongoing crisis, Rangers intends to implement the coronavirus job retention scheme for a number of employees. Rangers will ensure that everyone furloughed under this government scheme will receive 100% salary through top-up assistance from the club, with all other conditions and benefits remaining unchanged. By Gavin McCafferty. The National, 7th of April 2020. Why Kieran Tierney is set to put his annus horribilis behind him and come good at Arsenal. By Matthew Lindsay. As one of only five Scottish footballers to be the proud owner of a Premier League winner's medal, it's fair to say that Kevin Gallagher excelled during the years that he spent playing in the top flight in England. Gallagher may only have been involved in one game for Blackburn Rovers during the Lancashire club's successful 1994-95 campaign due to the broken leg he'd suffered the season before. However, the winning goal he scored in a 2-1 triumph over Crystal Palace at Ewood Park in April helped to ensure that Rovers pipped Manchester United to the title by just a single point the following month. And having been named in Kenny Dalglish's squad that term, he received a medal along with teammates like Henning Berg, Graham Lasso, Alan Shearer and Chris Sutton after they were presented with the trophy. Colin Hendry, also Blackburn, Darren Ferguson, Darren Fletcher and Brian McClair, all United, are the only other Scots with that particular gong in their collections. But Gallagher's time down south got off to a difficult start. The forward took a long time to adapt and settle after he moved to Coventry City from Dundee United in a £950,000 transfer back in 1990. So the former Scotland internationalist is confident that his compatriot Kieran Tierney, whose debut season at Arsenal has been one to forget for a variety of reasons, can put his annus horribilis firmly behind him in future and fully justify his record £25 million fee. There were a lot of hurdles for me to overcome initially in England, he said. I had to get used to a different lifestyle, a football club that was run differently, a different style of manager. There was a language barrier. I was a Glaswegian speaking with a Dundee twang. The first 6 months were very, very difficult. I found myself up against the England left-back, the second-choice England left-back, the next England left-back. I played against Pat van der Hauw, the notorious Spurs defender, who would take the legs away from under you whenever he could. It was a high standard. I wasn't used to consistently playing against such good teams in Scotland. I was also playing in a position which didn't suit me. I wasn't a winger. I was an attacking midfielder. John Sillett, the Coventry manager, played me as a right winger. I was taking corners, which I'd never done at Dundee United. Kevin Drinkle told him I wasn't a right winger. David Speedy said to him, change Kevin, move Kevin up front. When Terry Butcher took over, he saw what I could do and switched me, and that was when everything started happening for me. I was eventually moved into what you would class as a number 10 role, where I flourished behind Chris Sutton and Alan Shearer at Blackburn. Gallagher then can appreciate exactly what Tierney, who was recovering from a double hernia operation when moved down to London and then suffered a dislocated shoulder in December, has gone through in recent months. I can sympathise with Kieran, he said. He's moved away from home for the first time to another country. It can, as I can testify, be difficult. You're nervous. You want to do well. There's more tension there. You aren't as relaxed when you play. He's cost a lot of money and people are watching him to see how he does. Then he gets himself injured. Arsenal have been going through a difficult period as well, which probably hasn't helped. Arsene Wenger, who was manager for about 100 years, has left, and I think they're still nearly 2 years on trying to adapt to life without him. Supporters don't look at you as a person, they look at you as a footballer. All they see is what you're doing on the field. But you have emotions and issues away from the game like anybody else. Tierney, who had returned to training before football was suspended last month, was linked with a summer move to Leicester City, which former Celtic manager Brendan Rodgers is in charge. Bukayo Saka, the England under-18 internationalist, has performed well for Arsenal since being moved by his manager Mikel Arteta from his preferred position on the wing to left-back in the absence of Sead Kolasinac and Tierney. But Gallagher, who now works as a co-commentator for the BBC and BT Sport, believes his compatriot can displace Saka when the suspension's lifted later this year and produce the level of performance that made him a firm fan's favourite during his time at Parkhead on a weekly basis. "I know the quality Kieran has," he said. "He just has to show that consistently for Arsenal. It's only a matter of time before he comes good. He's just got to get through this period. When he does, then there will be no stopping him." Another Scot who's struggled to establish himself in the Premier League has been Stuart Armstrong. The former Celtic player has been in and out of the Southampton team since clinching a £7 million move in 2018. He lost his place in the national squad earlier this season due to his lack of game time. But Gallagher, who won 53 caps for his country and supplied the goals which secured their place in the France 98 finals, has been pleased to see Armstrong feature far more regularly for Ralf Hasenhüttl's side this year. "I like Stuart. I like the way he plays," he said. "I loved him at Dundee United and was disappointed when he went to Celtic. He struggled to begin with there as well. Then he came into things more and won a big money move to Southampton on the back of it. Stuart seems to take some time to find his feet when he moves, but I can understand why, having been there myself. I'm sure there will be no looking back for him now he's established himself again." By Matthew Lindsay. The National, 7th of April 2020. Why Liverpool's furlough U-turn was only choice for Club of the People. By James Morgan. Let there be no mistake, Liverpool deserve huge credit for their decision to roll back on plans to furlough non-playing staff. But is it too mischievous to suggest that Manchester City's decision not to apply for the government credit scheme had a bearing on the reversal of policy in what was becoming an increasingly unmitigated PR disaster for the Merseyside club? Certainly, the timing indicated as much. On Saturday, Liverpool opted to announce their decision to pursue the furlough option. A statement read, "Even prior to the decision on staff furloughing, there was a collective commitment at senior levels of the club, on and off the pitch, with everyone working towards a solution that secures jobs for employees of the club during this unprecedented crisis. There is ongoing active engagement about the topic of salary deductions during the period matches are not being played. These discussions are complex, and as a result, the process is ongoing." By Sunday afternoon, City had released a statement saying they would, quote, "not be utilising the UK government job retention scheme," end quote. As former players Jamie Carragher and Stan Collymore and the Spirit of Shankly fans group lined up to condemn Liverpool, it became clear that the club had underestimated the mood Liverpool supporters have long identified themselves as the club of the left, a belief that stretches back to the days of legendary manager Bill Shankly. Shankly's socialist credentials have long been seized upon by Liverpool supporters. His words have been emblazoned on T-shirts, his stories of life down the mines chiming with the people of a shipbuilding city who knew all about hardship. Football had given Shankly the chance to escape the privations of life in a mining community when he left Glenbuck in darkest Ayrshire to join Carlisle United in 1932. He was a regular visitor to Alderhay Children's Hospital, the epitome of a man who still remembered his roots. "The socialism I believe in isn't really politics," he would famously say. It is a way of living. It is humanity. I believe the only way to live and to be truly successful is by collective effort, with everyone working for each other, everyone helping each other, and everyone having a share of the rewards at the end of the day. That might be asking a lot, but it's the way I see football and the way I see life. This was a betrayal of Shankly's socialism. He devalued too any claim on Shankly's communitarian principles as club ethos, a view espoused by Chief Executive Peter Moore last year. It was a reference to a past characterised by the Scottish manager's adherence to working-class values and man-of-the-people populism. Yesterday, The Guardian carried a blog asking what Shankly might have done in the face of a pandemic. It concluded by saying, "Not what Liverpool are doing now." And so, with the tide of opinion threatening to engulf the club, coupled with their title rivals adopting the moral high ground, it seems Liverpool were forced to act. It raised a significant question. If they'd been able to make a turnaround so quickly, why had they pursued furlough in the first place? Moore's statement suggested the club's hierarchy had spent all of the weekend reviewing those decisions, and perhaps that is so. There was a rush to slap backs following Liverpool's decision. Certainly, as in the cases of Tottenham Hotspur and Newcastle United, it's better than no U-turn at all. Indeed, there has been no contrition from other big business leaders, billionaires who have, yes, we're looking at you, Philip Green and Richard Branson, sought government aid with nary a consideration for the optics. When the United owner Mike Ashley announced in the aftermath of lockdown that his employees and Sports Direct were key workers, there was a similar backlash. Again, the volte-face by Ashley was almost immediate, and yet there was no outpouring of well-wishes for the 55-year-old. With good reason. An MP's report into the treatment of Sports Direct employees in 2016 concluded that staff were not treated as humans. Everyone is entitled to change their mind and allowed to show contrition. But in doing so, the overwhelming feeling is that big corporations, companies or even football clubs are merely in damage limitation mode, reacting to the public outcry. Liverpool will have looked at Spurs and Newcastle as the first dominoes to fall, but those clubs have not played on their socialist links or presented themselves as the club of the people. The backlash was always going to be more severe for them. Yes, Liverpool deserve praise for admitting their mistake, but even in doing so there was an air of defiance, with Moore noting, "In the spirit of transparency, we must always be clear. Despite the fact we were in a healthy position prior to this crisis, our revenues have been shut off, yet our outgoings remain. And like almost every other sector of society, there's great uncertainty and concern over our present and future. It's an unavoidable truth that several of these scenarios involve a massive downturn in revenue, with correspondingly unprecedented operating losses. Having these vital financial resources so profoundly impacted would obviously negatively affect our ability to operate as we previously have." It was a warning that redundancies may follow. So it's worth remembering that Liverpool, the seventh richest club in the world, posted pre-tax profits of £42 million in February for 2018 to 2019 and paid £43 million to agents alone last season. By James Morgan. The National, Monday the 6th of April 2020. Delusional UEFA need to shelf self-interest now. By Matthew Lindsay. So much for the brave new dawn that Alexander Seferin's election as UEFA president back in 2016 was supposed to herald for the much maligned organisation. There may not have been any whiff of the corruption, dishonesty and financial irregularities which plagued Michel Platini's troubled reign on Seferin's four-year watch. Yet the handling of the coronavirus crisis in the last few weeks by the Slovenian lawyer and his assorted associates in Neon has been nothing short of criminal at times. UEFA's member associations have looked to the European Games governing body for guidance, leadership and inspiration, all of which they surely have a moral, if not legal, obligation to provide in the circumstances, since football across the world was suspended last month. Alas, delusion, obfuscation and self-interest are all that have been forthcoming. Administrators in many countries, including Scotland, who are rightly alarmed at the potential impact not having any competitive matches or income will have on their clubs in the weeks and months ahead, have been left confused, disillusioned and frustrated. Nobody involved in the conference calls UEFA have held since the outbreak has been left in any doubt about where their priorities lie. The Champions League, Europa League and Euro 2020. Protecting the interests of the powerful Big Five leagues in England, France, Germany, Italy and Spain, whose teams are by far the biggest box office attractions in their continental competitions, is clearly also a consideration. UEFA's reaction to the Belgian Pro League's decision to declare Club Brugge champions last week. They threatened that any league not played to finish on the field of play would risk being banned from their competitions. Didn't stem from any idealistic desire to preserve sporting integrity. The financial implications of not completing the Champions League and Europa League, as well as the Bundesliga, La Liga, Ligue 1, Premier League and Serie A this summer, were very much to the fore. Having to abandon those tournaments will leave the respective authorities facing substantial compensation payments to advertisers, broadcasting rights holders and sponsors. It is possible that UEFA have to illustrate that every possible attempt was made to reach a conclusion to avoid such costly litigation. Who knows? Perhaps the current situation will improve to an extent that games can take place and trophies won on the pitch, but it seems improbable given the medical experts' predictions. Epidemiologists anticipate the COVID-19 outbreak won't peak in the United Kingdom until the end of May or middle of June. Could fixtures even be fulfilled behind closed doors? Something which Seferin suggested once again this weekend, within the allotted timeframe, if that's the case. It is doubtful governments will give the go-ahead for any kind of public gathering soon. The Belgian Pro League highlighted some of the complex issues they face restarting play in their statement last week. The current situation does not allow us to know if and when a resumption of collective training can be planned, they said. A resumption of competition could not exclude the risk to the health of players, employees and all those involved in the organisation of matches and in maintaining order. In addition, the possible contamination of a player or a core of players risks influencing the sporting development of the rest of the competition in an unacceptable manner. Even if closed matches were theoretically possible, the additional pressure that the organisation of such matches would place on health services and law enforcement should be avoided. In addition, the decisions of the local authorities threaten to make it impossible to run the championship days simultaneously. UEFA, the Bundesliga, La Liga, Ligue 1, the Premier League and Serie A should perhaps consider the public condemnation there's been of companies who haven't grasped the devastating effect this unprecedented crisis has had on the world at large and adopt a more hardline approach. If football fans see the game they love, their own clubs in particular, struggling because television companies and multinational corporations are attempting to recoup their money, they will turn their ire on them in large numbers and their business will suffer as a result. What are the broadcasters and the sponsors going to do? Said Kieran Maguire, a football finance lecturer at the University of Liverpool last month. A lot will depend on whether they're going to take a short or a long-term view of their relationships. But if they don't want to jeopardise them, they won't demand money back. They are living in exceptional times at the moment. I don't think they've got any alternative. If they took a harsher line and that leaks out, then the backlash against the broadcasters from the fan bases would be very, very severe. Allowing the SPFL, who have a series of meetings scheduled this week, to decide their own fate without having to worry about future sanctions would enable them to free up much-needed cash to give to clubs struggling to stay afloat and then to move forward. By Matthew Lindsay. The National, Monday the 6th of April 2020. Hibs great Pat Stanton on being crowned Player of the Year, Jock Stein, Celtic, and Life in Isolation by Matthew Lindsay. Nobody in Scottish football, not even the members of the Celtic side that coasted to a fifth consecutive title and went all the way to the European Cup final, could get close to Pat Stanton back in 1970. Fast forward 50 years to the present day, and not an awful lot, albeit for quite different reasons, has changed for the Hibernian great. Stanton is, like everybody of his generation across the country just now, following government and medical advice and living in isolation in order to avoid making contact with anyone who might be infected by coronavirus. For a fit and active 75-year-old who relished attending matches at Easter Road in his role as a Hibs ambassador before the COVID-19 pandemic struck last month, being confined to his home in Tranent hasn't been an enjoyable experience, being apart from his children and grandchildren especially. Yet he understands the elderly are among the groups most at risk from the outbreak, and watching news bulletins of the worsening situation with his wife has underlined to him it is the correct course of action. "You just listen to what you've been told to do," said Stanton. "What else can you do? It's out there. It's completely new. Nobody knows what's going to happen or how long it's going to last. You just have to make do as best you can. Hopefully at the end of it all, it'll be cleared up. It's obviously being done for a purpose. I've been seeing all the hospital admissions rising on television. You see businesses struggling, folk losing their jobs. There's a lot of hardship. It's depressing viewing. These are tough times for a lot of people. There's always folk worse off than you. You've just got to count your blessings." Stanton, modest to a fault, considers himself fortunate to be named the Scottish Football Writers Association Footballer of the Year back in 1970. Celtic, who he would later go on to play for, won the First Division and League Cup double that season, and also defeated English champions Leeds United in the European Cup semi-final, thanks to the efforts of the likes of George Conley, Tommy Gemmell, Davy Hay, Jimmy Johnson, Bobby Lennox and Bobby Murdoch. However, the nation's scribes were still of the opinion that the classy midfielder had been the outstanding performer and presented him with their prestigious award, an honour that wasn't bestowed upon a Hibs player again until Lee Griffiths won it some 43 years later in 2013. "With what Celtic were achieving in Europe and at home, it was good to get picked," he said. "Hibs were a good side back then, but Celtic were a terrific side who were doing great at the time. In another era, Hibs would perhaps have pushed on and won more, but Celtic were a match for anybody." So, though, was Stanton. He had matured into an exceptional talent by that stage in his career and was a fixture in the Scotland side. He had no inferiority complex. "Early on, you're just hoping to get picked and keep your place in the team," he said. "There's a touch of the daft laddie about you. As time goes by and you become more of a regular, your confidence grows. I was 25 by then and had more experience, and that helped me. I was confident of doing well no matter who the opposition was." Working under two great managers, Jock Stein and Bob Shankly, and playing alongside some renowned professionals including John Baxter, John Fraser, John McNamee and Neil Martin in his early days at Hibs, had aided his development to that point greatly. "I was lucky," he said. "There were terrific players there who were all a big, big help to young players starting out. Baxter, Fraser, McNamee, Martin, to have these people on the side with you was invaluable. When you're about to do something stupid, they would tell you not to. You learn quickly. Jock Stein came in 1964. When a new manager takes over, you always think, what's he going to be like? What ideas will he have? Will he fancy me as a player? Everybody has their concerns. On his very first day, Jock got all the players in the dressing room. He introduced himself and then said, there will be changes here, but it will be you who make the changes. He never asked you to do anything you couldn't do. He knew your limitations and played to them. He was a larger-than-life figure to me." Stein was replaced by Shankly, the elder brother of Liverpool manager Bill, who led Dundee to their only Scottish title in 1962, a year later. His successor proved to be a more introverted individual than his famous and charismatic sibling. Stanton soon discovered he was every bit as knowledgeable and inspiring. "Bob Shankly was a big influence on me," he said. "He was a nice man, had a good idea of the game and had done very well as a coach. He wasn't as outgoing as his brother, he was quiet, but he had a great understanding of football. The minute he started talking, you listened." Stanton was, to his delight and surprise, reunited with Steen after spending 13 years at Hibs. He joined Celtic in a swap deal with Jackie McNamara Sr. in 1976 when he was 31. He would flourish in the sweeper role he was handed and help the Parkhead club win the Premier Division and Scottish Cup double in what turned out to be his final season. A knee injury then forced him to retire. "People didn't move about so much in those days," he said. "But eventually, Jock caught up with me at the end of things, which was great. To go and play under him again with guys like Danny McGrain, Kenny Dalglish, Bobby Lennox and Roy Aitken at my age was something else. To win the league and cup double so late in my career was amazing. I can remember sitting in the dressing room at Hampden with my medal after the cup final, and Jock came over and said, 'There's a lot of great players who play all their lives and never win one of them.' At the start, he was there, and at the end, he was there." But Stanton's heart always lay in Leith. After managing Cowdenbeath and Dunfermline, he had a spell in the Hibs dugout in the 1980s. He was honoured to be asked by Easter Road Chief Executive Leanne Dempster to become their official ambassador. "He's very much looking forward to taking in a game again when the current crisis is over." "The game has changed," he said. "But people still go along every Saturday hoping their team wins. That's still the same. I was delighted when they asked me to become an ambassador. I couldn't believe it. It's nice to meet people on match days who might have watched you from the terraces but have never spoken to you. They probably booed you, but they've never spoken to you." In Pat Stanton's case, they probably haven't. By Matthew Lindsay. The National, 2nd of April 2020. Rangers ace Andy Halliday deserves a new Ibrox contract, insists Alan Hutton. By Aidan Smith. Andy Halliday hasn't played a lot of football under the leadership of Rangers boss Stephen Gerrard. The 28-year-old has struggled to shoulder his way into the light blue starting lineup, with no available spot in midfield and Borna Barisic appearing to be the preferred left-back at Ibrox. But despite his lack of game time, Gerrard's hero Alan Hutton insists his former club should offer Halliday a new deal, simply for his experience alone. Speaking to Football Insider, he said, "Halliday's out of contract. Will they keep him in? He seems to be favoured at left-back with Borna Barisic. I would hand him a new deal. I think he knows what it's all about to play for Rangers. Whenever he's been called on, he's done a job. Whether it be at left-back, it can be difficult for players to be shifted about. I think he has, over the period of time, done well when he's filled in. These are the sort of players that you need. I've spoken a million times about players with experience who know how to fight, work hard, know what the fans want, put in 100% every time. These are the kind of guys you need in your squad. If it was up to me, I would definitely hand them something." By Aidan Smith. The National, 2nd of April 2020. Hearts players bring in PFA Scotland to negotiate with club over wage cuts. By Aidan Smith. PFA Scotland is to negotiate with Hearts on behalf of the club's players over proposed wage cuts. Hearts are among the Scottish clubs who've asked players to take a pay cut, 50% in their case, amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The move was met with criticism in some quarters, and at the weekend the club admitted they were keeping the option of suspending contracts on the table on the advice of the SPFL and its legal advisers. In a statement on Wednesday, PFA Scotland said Hearts players want to go down a deferral route. The players recognise the cash flow problems at the club as a result of the COVID-19 outbreak and wish to assist the club through these difficult times by offering to negotiate substantial wage deferrals, a statement read. With the guidance of PFA Scotland, clubs across the country have entered into negotiation and agreements with players about wage deferrals alongside their participation in the government's job retention scheme. The union fully supports this approach and commends the SPFL clubs who've entered into these discussions. As we've stated since this situation first began, PFA Scotland is firm in its position that clubs and players can more effectively face the challenges ahead by working together and ensuring that decisions are reached through mutual agreement only. Players' contracts cannot be terminated or altered unilaterally, but the union is more than willing to assist in negotiating agreements between clubs and players. In addition, our position is, should clubs reduce the wages of existing players on valid agreed contracts and then use the sum saved to sign new players in August, that would be wholly unfair. We're in unprecedented times, and the situation is changing on a daily basis. It may be the case that further grants to assist football clubs will become available through FIFA, and this would be another avenue for clubs to explore to negate the need for widespread wage reductions. Jambo's owner Anne Budge told both players and staff 2 weeks ago to prepare for their salaries to be slashed by 50% as she sought to avert a financial disaster brought on by the outbreak. Boss Daniel Stendel has waived his wages during the shutdown, while skipper Stephen Naismith was the first member of the playing staff to agree to the cuts. By Aidan Smith. The National, Thursday, 2nd of April 2020. Tony Fitzpatrick says, "This season is over. Let's get on with planning a better future for Scottish football." By Graham McGarry. The decision may not yet have been made, but for Tony Fitzpatrick, it's only a matter of time. The St Mirren legend and CEO says that this season is already over and it's now time to make the most of the situation. The ramifications on calling the season, with 8 rounds of fixtures still to play, aren't lost on Fitzpatrick. The thorny issues of the Premiership title, relegations and promotions all have to be resolved, but he believes it's time to look at the bigger picture. Common sense, he says, would dictate that Celtic are awarded the title, given their healthy lead at the top, while at the other end of the table there exists an opportunity to reform the Scottish leagues for the greater good of the game in this country. If it's not now that the Scottish Game's myriad stakeholders can step away from their narrow self-interest to work towards something that will benefit the whole, then when? "This season is done," Fitzpatrick said. "People don't like it, but it's done, so why not make the decision? I can understand how difficult it must be for the SPFL and the SFA, so I'm not criticising anybody, but I really think we need some clarity now. I know there's going to be consequences with those decisions, but I hope within the next week or so things are clearer. I know that everybody's saying we will play the games, but it's impossible, I think, if you're listening properly to what's going on. There have been 30 games played, so I'm not in favour of making the season null and void. That would be criminal. But I think this is maybe an opportunity to try out something different. I'd like to see a 16-team Premiership. But even if it was just Dundee United and Inverness who came up, we do away with relegation and give Celtic the title. That would work for me. Rangers have been incredible in terms of where they came from to where they are now. But I think if we're being honest, you couldn't see them catching Celtic. It's more difficult, I think, to put teams down, so why not bring the two teams up? I would go further and make it 16 teams. I think a real revamp of Scottish football is needed, and why not take the opportunity to have a look at it? When you see what the likes of Barry Hearn did with darts and snooker, we need to have that creative thinking too, to come up with a product that the big TV companies are going to pay top dollar for. This is our chance to do something special with the game, to try things. It's hopefully a once-in-a-lifetime event. Who would have thought a virus would stop football completely all around the world in our lifetime? It's a horrible thing to happen, and there are no words to express the impact it's having on people's lives and how much we wish this didn't happen. All we can do is try to look at the positive side coming out of it and what opportunities are there to really revamp things. We have to come together and think of the greater good, not just our own self-interest. I think that is what this whole situation is teaching us in general. St Mirren have yet to announce any plans to potentially cut wages or place staff on furlough to help them weather the financial fallout. But Fitzpatrick admits they won't be immune to the lack of income generated during this indefinite period of inactivity. We're in a healthy financial position today, but how long can that be sustained? He said. Let's be honest, this is going to go on for a good while. I hate to say it, but we're like any other club, and if there is no income, then it's common sense you will have to look at things. We're going to do our best to keep things the way they are for as long as possible. That's all we can do. Bigger clubs with massive resources have already taken such steps. But let's look at the positive side and hope we can hang in there. When you see clubs like Celtic and Rangers with their resources struggling to keep things the way they are, then you know it's a serious situation. What has buoyed Fitzpatrick, though, and made him sure that St Mirren will survive, is the way that the club's fans have rallied for the cause. Our supporters have been a big help, and one of the things that really helped is that they weren't pushing for refunds of season tickets, he said. It's been incredible. The St Mirren supporters have followed the club through thick and thin, and I know only too well how hard that's been for them at times. They've rallied round. The overwhelming thing has been how worried they've been about the club. We are all humbled by that because they realise how much the club means to the community, and we're the same. The community means so much to us. All clubs are doing this. I'm not just singling out St Mirren, but I've been so proud, along with the chairman, the directors and the manager, about how much everyone has gathered round. It's been a real community response and a fantastic effort from our supporters. They're desperate to help us. We're a business as well. We've got to remember that. We employ people, and the work they do is incredible. At times, it's humbling. By Graham McGarry. The National, Thursday, 2nd of April 2020. Stokes desperate to spend fourth stint at Easter Road. By Alan Temple. Anthony Stokes has revealed he would love a fourth stint at Hibs after declaring himself ready to return to British football. The Republic of Ireland international concedes that his own attitude played a part in his most recent departure from Easter Road, with the club releasing him in January 2018, just 3 weeks after a breach of discipline during a winter training camp. I loved Hibs, and even the last time I was there, would have loved to stay longer, Stokes said. But it was just me being my usual self and not backing down about something. I probably could have stayed at the club, but I just stand my ground sometimes, and that can go against me. I wish I'd stayed longer. I do. I definitely want to come back to Scotland or the UK. Where I end up? I don't know. To be honest, I'd love to have another stint at Hibs, but it's unlikely that'll ever happen. After Neil Lennon showed Stokes the door, the forward enjoyed a nomadic existence. He's turned out for Greek outfit Apollon Smyrni, Traktor Sashi in Iran, and Turkish cracks Adana Demirspor. In January, he penned a 6-month deal with Gulf giants Persepolis, but due to the coronavirus outbreak, that deal will expire before he has the opportunity to join the club. After his adventures abroad, Stokes, now in lockdown in Dublin, is desperate to put down roots once more. I think it's quite likely I will play in Scotland again, he told former Hibs teammate Marvin Bartley during an Instagram Live interview. I'm not even 32 yet, and in the last few years I've done the whole abroad thing. That's hard, hard work. But I've still got the hunger, probably more so now. By Alan Temple.
Well, that concludes the National for the week ending the 7th of April 2020. I hope you've enjoyed listening to what we've been able to produce from our homes across West Central Scotland, and that you'll also think about visiting us at www.qandreview.com or tweeting us at qandreview. That's Cuandreview. For now, keep safe, keep listening.